Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride.
All right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom. It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
What do you want from me? I'm not a Mary, the sweetheart.
Goodness sake, kid. Keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not a Mary, the sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. It's Thursday, which means tomorrow's Friday, which means the weekend's almost here. Hopefully that's the case for you, but we are grateful you've chosen to spend a few of your minutes in your afternoon with us. We're very grateful for that. One thing we haven't discussed quite yet, we just listened to Joe Biden listing off some of the executive orders he's going to sign, including a mask mandate for 100 days and specific places. Last night he signed one on federal property, and then he went and gave a speech at the Lincoln Memorial and didn't wear a mask, which honestly, I don't personally care. I don't think you need to wear a mask when you're not standing by anybody outside. That's common sense to me, but it's do as I say, not as I do. And this, you know, it's the exact same thing as I see, you know, for instance, Lori Lightfoot in Chicago, J.B. Pritzker in Illinois, Governor Cuomo in New York, where they're all of a sudden starting to talk about, you know, we need to open these businesses. There's not going to be any businesses left to open. Mm-hmm. And I'm just sitting here going, huh? Like, what? Because it's gaslighting. It makes you feel like you're crazy. It makes you look at the world around you and go, I missed something. I must have been in a coma for a week and something drastically changed. And there is a key part to this story that I have not been informed. When all of a sudden they can just come out and say, yeah, let's open stuff up. Now, I don't want to cut my nose off to spite my face and say, well, you weren't for that when Trump was in office. Don't do it now. No, open the gosh darn businesses so that people can get back to work and save their livelihoods. Like, don't be dumb about this. And it's the same thing with watching Joe Biden give that speech, of which I did not watch, but I saw plenty of the pictures and saw some of the clips, and stand out there on federal property not wearing a mask after he signed a presidential executive order saying you have to, like, I just, it's a massive facepalm moment that I think this is bonkers. And the biggest crazy thing about it is that common sense dictates that what he did was fine. But in the world of, you know, politicians and virtue signaling and grandstanding, we have to sign, you know, when you sign an executive order mandating masks, most people aren't even going to look far enough into what you're doing to realize you're talking about ... on federal property. Mm. Or what he just said right now, ... in interstate travel where you're on a train or you're on an airplane. Those are things that are caveats to what's being put out there. But if you're somebody who is obsessed with masks, and not obsessed with your masks, you're obsessed with everybody else's masks. Obsessed with it. Mm-hmm. And you have a Facebook page basically dedicated to posting cutesy memes that shame other people into how they wear their masks or why you just need to stop being a selfish jerk and just wear your mask, like wear your dang mask, over and over and over again. When you read a headline and it contains the word mask mandate, you just assume it's what you want it to be. You're not reading the article. Nobody's reading the articles. Nobody is telling you after the fact, well, it was on federal property and actually you had to wear masks there anyway, to begin with. Nobody's talking about that. So we have the president who signing these executive orders right now. Dr. Fauci was with him. Here's something we haven't talked about yet, though. Did you guys see what was going on in Portland? Katie, you sent me a DM last night of the craziness that's going on there. This is a question that Kevin McCarthy was asked today. Listen.
Well, after the rioters came into the Capitol on January 6th, you voted to overturn the results in Pennsylvania and Arizona. You also signed on to that Texas lawsuit to invalidate the elections. You waited until a couple of weeks ago to declare that Joe Biden won the election. Given the violence that we saw, do you regret the role you played in any way in sowing doubt about the election?
Look, I denounce any violence. Denounce it that day, denounce it now. I denounce it in the summer. I denounce what happened last night in Portland and Seattle as well. I'm very consistent. What I voted on wasn't to overturn an election because it wouldn't. It would not overturn. What I signed on to amicus was the exact same question that you did, a constitutional question about did a legislature have the right or did the legislature actually move through to make any changes? This is the same thing that has happened in the last three presidential elections. It's the same thing that Nancy Pelosi said on the floor when she said, this is democracy, we should debate it. It's different than when Jim Clyburn voted to overturn Ohio, which you'd say, because that would change the outcome of the presidential election. So let's be very clear on what we did. If mine was based upon policy and principle, yes, I would stay the course. I've always denounced whatever individuals did here, what they did in the summer, and what they did last night. That's un-American, that's undemocratic, and anybody involved in that should be prosecuted. I've been very, very clear about that from day one.
Who's asking Joe Biden if he denounces the violence in the Northwest right now? Who's putting that question in front of him? And I'm just asking the question, who's asking the question? Not who's asking if Joe Biden feels as though he has a responsibility for the violence and destruction that is happening in Portland and Seattle. Not only are they not asking Joe Biden about that, they're not talking about it at all. But today, reporters in front of Kevin McCarthy, who is the House Minority Leader for the Republican Party, was asked if he wants to denounce any responsibility that he might have had in the January 6th Capitol Hill riot. This is insanity, and you know it's insanity. It's not even worth my outrage anymore to listen to that and go, can you believe it? Well, yeah, I believe it. I'd have to be as dumb as a box of rocks to not expect those kind of questions of our Republican leaders. Like, Annie, you've been paying attention for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for like the last 7 years of politics. Why would I expect anything different? And when you have this unrest that is taking, like, what is Antifa even want?
Right.
What is the goal here? I mean, when you look at what took place at the Capitol building, there is an understanding, an agreed upon understanding by the people in the mainstream media that these were people who are unhappy with the election results. I don't think that is cohesively, entirely accurate. I think that there was a mix, like the QAnon faction of that. QAnon does not represent the drastically vast majority of Trump supporters. QAnon is a fringe group and should be treated as such. And again, going back to my comments earlier in the show where when we talked with Paris Denard, who is the RNC voice for Black Media Affairs, when we keep talking about, you know, Joe Biden said he wants to, you know, root out and wage war against white supremacy and racism in this country. Well, we should absolutely eradicate every inch of those things in our country that exist. But when you don't really define what you mean by that and you falsely assert that anybody who might have supported President Trump likely, potentially falls into one of those categories, boy, have you done a great disservice to the actual measure of getting this deplorable disgustingness out of our country every time it rears its ugly head. And it's the same thing with what we are seeing at the Capitol Hill building as well. When you broad brushstroke across every Trump supporter, suggesting that everyone really has a little bit of the QAnon thing going on, or that everybody is really, you know, interested in the destruction that took place or the violence that took place there, you're painting with too broad a brush. And you're going to lose people in the effort to eradicate the very thing that we all agree. We all agree. Every common sense, logical thinker in this country agrees that violence and destruction is wrong and bad and should stop. We all agree on it. But for whatever reason, politically speaking, for the people who get the microphones, the people, the politicians who have the power and authority, we only call it out when it's politically expedient. And it has never been more apparent than today. And it's disgusting. Watch some of the stuff that's going on in Portland and Seattle. It's ridiculous. Just like the Capitol Hill building was ridiculous. We're going to take a quick break and talk to Kevin Wheeler when we come back. He's a KMOX sports reporter. We'll check in with him real quick before we wrap up the show and hand it over to the DGS. So stick around. We're going to talk a little Blues, a little baseball. See what's going on in St. Louis sports here in just a minute. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Hope you're having a good Thursday afternoon. Thanks for joining us. A reminder, you can stream 97.1 FM Talk and the Annie Fry Show anywhere you go with the radio.com app. Download it and favorite 97.1 FM Talk. We're on there noon to 3. You can also subscribe to the Annie Fry Show podcast there. And we have each hour that we do. And we also, I think, Katie, do we have the segments? Like if we have an interview, like just a really killer interview with Kevin Wheeler, you could go on to radio.com, subscribe to the podcast, and hear the killer interview that we're about to do. You can rewind, but you can't fast forward, at least.
Yes.
Not that I know of. Kevin Wheeler, thank you for being with us. KMOX sports reporter. Talk to us a little Blues hockey, at least, from last night. A disappointing loss in overtime with a shootout there. What was your takeaway from the game yesterday evening?
Well, it's kind of the same as the rest of the early part of the year. I mean, almost every team that I've watched so far, obviously, you know, with most attention on the Blues, but I've watched a bunch of other action around the league. Everybody looks a little bit kind of jumbled. You know, with the Blues, you're getting, you know, a couple of stretches here and there where they look really good. Or, you know, that opening game against Colorado, they looked great. The next game was a total disaster. And then the game against San Jose that they won 5-4 wasn't a total disaster because they won. But it was kind of back and forth, and they were, you know, they got off to a slow start and they fell behind 2-0. It's just been kind of a roller coaster at the beginning, but again, you know, with no preseason games to iron out some of the problems and new guys trying to fit in with the core players kind of on the fly, and this is happening everywhere. This is not just a Blues problem, but it's certainly something that we're seeing early on, just not even performances. We're looking at, I mean, like last night, Craig Berube after the game simply said, we have too many guys that aren't competing hard enough. And I mean, who am I to disagree with the coach?
Sure.
If he's saying that, I guess we can look at that as part of the explanation too.
Does the atmosphere, I mean, a slow start, like you said, across the league, that's just due to the games that weren't able to be played or the preparation that wasn't able to be done ahead of time. Does that have anything to do with the makeup of the schedule or lack of people in the stands? Just maybe not warmed up as much as they usually are at this point in the season?
Maybe. I mean, I know, you know, people do talk about hockey players playing a lot on emotion, and I mean, it's not the same energy in the building that it normally would be, but they all went through that last year in the bubble. I mean, I think that they probably at least become somewhat used to that dynamic. I think it's just more that, you know, you didn't butt heads with anybody in a different uniform before the game started for real. You know, when you think about, you know, the preparation for the season, and we saw this, by the way, in the NFL early this season, in the 2020 season, because they didn't play any preseason games. Well, the first couple of weeks weren't good. You know, there was some bad football. There were some weird outcomes that didn't make any sense, where a team that we thought was going to be good looked terrible, or a team we thought was going to be terrible won. And, you know, over time, it settled itself down. And, you know, over the course of probably the first, I'd say probably the first 3 or 4 weeks, the NFL was a little weird. But then it started to become more as we expected it to be. And I think this will be the same thing. You know, give it another couple of weeks, and I think teams will probably start to look like, you know, the teams that we expected.
Kevin Wheeler, KMOX Sports Reporter, on the phone with us. Have the Blues, or I guess really the NHL, have they struggled more financially through all this because their TV contracts aren't as big and they rely more on that in-person attendance than, say, somebody like the NFL would?
Yeah, they're all, you know, it's a little different structure, right? So, yeah, the NHL is going to be more reliant on attendance than the sports with bigger TV deals. But, you know, their expenses are lower, too, in the sense that they have a lower payroll, right? I mean, you know, the Blues spend to the cap, but the cap is only about, what, 60-65% of what a normal Cardinals payroll would look like. And the Cardinals aren't usually at the very top, although they're normally in the top 10 of Major League Baseball. They're not normally in the top 3 or 4 or top 5. So, you know, I mean, it's a different scale, but yes, I think that they've taken a hit. Now, since COVID all started back in March, I think baseball's taken the biggest financial hit. I mean, keep in mind that last year the NHL did get to play 90% of its schedule before the shutdown. So they had 90% of their season with fans in seats as usual and, you know, delays. Now they had their shutdown, and there were a lot of expenses that went with that. So they took a hit, and they're starting to take more of a hit now. The NFL has taken a big hit, but they're less reliant on fans in seats than Major League Baseball, for example. I mean, they're much more about the big national television deals and the way that money works. And they have full-on equal revenue sharing, which you don't have in baseball. So, you know, and then you compare that to baseball that lost essentially 70% of their revenue last year, right? I mean, they lost 2/3 of the schedule. They didn't sell any tickets in the regular season. They sold a few in the postseason. So I think baseball's probably taking it the worst. But again, you know, generally speaking, they do make more money than hockey does, than the NHL does. So over time, I'd say they should be able to survive it. But I think we're starting to see now that the NHL and probably the NBA by extension will start to feel that cut this year because they're playing without fans for the moment and maybe without a lot of fans for most of this season.
Kevin, I think it's so interesting, too, to look at some of the backstories behind these different franchises, especially in different sports, that are having to deal with, you know, the coronavirus, the way it's being handled by each league specifically, but also by state. For instance, San Jose, they have, what, like a 10-game road trip because they can't, because they're in California. Yep. They can't do anything at home because California won't allow indoor practices, of course, games and such. I'm curious if you have knowledge of this, you know, affecting other teams in the NHL, but also Major League Baseball, as that's the next season to take shape here, especially for us here in St. Louis.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely part of the problem. I mean, the San Francisco 49ers had to move their operations to Arizona for the last few weeks of the regular season because they weren't allowed to do anything in their home facilities. I think there's no question that's an issue for the NBA and the NHL now and moving forward, because and it's going to be an issue for baseball for sure, just that each city is going to have a different standard, right? I mean,
right.
You might have a case where, you know, the Cubs aren't allowed to have fans based on, I'm just speculating. I don't know whose rules are what at this point because I haven't gotten that far down the path of getting ready for the season. But you could have it where, you know, the Cubs can't have fans and the Cardinals can, or the Cardinals can't and the Reds can, or whatever. I mean, I think that, you know, that, and in baseball, that's a bigger deal because, again, they don't have the same kind of revenue sharing that the other sports do. It's a lot more about what you can generate in your market as opposed to splitting everything across the board equally. So it's going to be one of those fascinating things. And baseball's got one edge, and it's the same edge that football had, is that, you know, you're outdoors, so it's going to be a little bit safer in general to have people in stands. But it's definitely something that we got to get our hands around. I know it's going to be a problem for basketball and for baseball or hockey when it comes to being indoors. And I don't know what the solution is going to be for them, but other than creativity, I mean, there are plenty of places that teams could play. It just may be kind of awkward for those teams.
Kevin, we had a virtual winter warm-up this year, of course, and this does seem like there was maybe some news leaked there. I don't know if it was on purpose or not. It had to be on purpose. Like, they would just, like, randomly say something in there. But Adam Wainwright. It looks like they've offered contracts to Molina and Wainwright. I'm seeing reports that it was something like $5-6 million for Wainwright. Is that enough?
I mean, I hope so. I mean, when you're looking at the free agent marketplace, there are not many starting pitchers. There are some high end guys that are going to make more than that, but there aren't that many that are making much more than that. And the ones that are guys that are a little bit younger. And I think that's kind of where it is with Waino. And I'm not sure exactly what the dollar amounts are. I mean, look, the marketplace is going to be based on if there's one team out there that thinks you're worth more than that, right? If there's one team that thinks you're worth $8 million, well, then you're worth $8 million. And I think that, you know, it's not surprising to hear that the team has made offers. It's not surprising that the numbers may be lower than we think. I don't know that there's a lot of choice at this point. I mean, you know, when you're looking at guys that are like, anyone, we'll put Yadi in this too, guys that are getting near 40 just don't carry the same certainty that guys that are 6 or 7 or 8 years younger do, or 10 years younger. So typically offers are going to be more incentive laden when it comes to players like that. And then when you take into account this year and not knowing what your revenue is going to be, I wonder if even those incentives are less than what they would have been in a previous year.
Yeah, there's still a lot to be ironed out for the St. Louis Cardinals and baseball teams, I suppose, across the league. I'm curious, you know, a lot of grumbling going on in St. Louis, which is really kind of what we do in the winter, is grumble about wanting big deals that don't, like, that's what you do. So it's winter, so we grumble. But there aren't a lot of big moves being discussed. I've seen breakouts of the last 4, 5, 6 years of big moves that the Cardinals have made. Certainly it's an unorthodox offseason with the pandemic still being in play. But is there a reason why the Cardinals should be given a bit of a pass here to not make the moves to be a World Series contending team in this offseason for the upcoming season?
No, I don't think anybody needs to give them a pass. I mean, they've set the standard themselves with their own performance and their own statements, right? I mean, they are very consistent about being a contender every year. And that's how they have set up their organization. That's how they describe it. So, I mean, if you're a customer, if you're a fan, I'm sure that you should expect that, right? I mean, if that's what has been the message, and it's, by the way, it's still their message this offseason. They say they plan on being a contending team. So there's no problem with kind of sticking with that and holding them to it. Now, you know, there are many ways to get to that point. I mean, you can go out and make big moves and, you know, win the offseason to a degree. And you know, I'd be more happy with that. I'm sure most Cardinals fans listening would be more happy with that. You can choose to go a different route. The thing is, you know, are you willing to deal with the fallout if you're wrong, right? I mean, is it going to mean empty seats? Is it going to mean, you know, lower television ratings later in the year if the team is struggling? And that's kind of the decision that, you know, ownership and front office people have to make is, what's the risk involved with each of our strategies? And, you know, if the standard right now is we expect a contender every year, then sure, let's hold to that. I mean, there's no reason to back off of that. Now, there's multiple ways to do that. You know, whether they make a move of significance or not, they still have a really good chance at winning the division. But boy, you know, you don't want to get to where it was in 16, 17, and 18, where you're a game or two out and you end up missing by a game or two because of moves you didn't make or moves you didn't make sooner.
Yep. That's so much so. And St. Louisans do fill those seats when they're allowed to, of course, with record numbers because they've been told that they are going to be given that championship contending team. So I think that's fair to for them to expect it for sure. Kevin, thank you for being on with us. We appreciate it. Looking forward to getting the Blues a little bit more well-versed on the ice and getting a little bit more comfortable in their skates and continuing to talk to you about actual real-life St. Louis sports. It's a pleasure.
Anything. Yay, we've got games.
We've got games. Thank you, Kevin. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, you guys take care.
Thank you. You as well. The Blues are fun to watch. I said this during the Stanley Cup run. I am not a hockey fan, but I'm a Blues fan. And I say that because I am a passionate baseball fan and a passionate Cardinals fan. And I know the difference, but like, I can't watch hockey and explain what's going on. I can pretty much explain what's going on with football. And we watch college football in my house. We don't watch the NFL anymore. Big Rams fans when they were in town. My dad was a season ticket holder, and I went to just years and years and years of the worst football that you could ever pay to watch. Like, inventive ways to be terrible. The St. Louis Rams.
Have you been to a hockey game?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Because that to me is, that's where the action's at. Yeah. At a live hockey game, there's almost no better sport.
Mm-hmm. Everybody says that, and I think that's there's probably a lot of accuracy to it, but I would still rather sit through a baseball game or a football game. No, I mean, I don't dislike hockey. I enjoy being there, but I just don't understand. I think part of that has to do with being a former athlete myself. I was a four-sport athlete through my senior year of high school. Was pretty accomplished as an athlete in a smaller school, so I'm going to measure my accomplishments a little bit there. But I understand sports. Like, I was a basketball player, volleyball player, softball, and track. And I understand what's going on, and I get frustrated with myself when I'm participating in something that I wish I understood. Like, I want to know the strategy. And hockey, there's just so much chemistry that goes with hockey and watching it. It's actually, like, I hope this doesn't offend hockey fans, it's actually kind of beautiful in a way to watch how it works and how the team works together in a way that you just have to really understand a team ethic and atmosphere and chemistry that is absolutely there in hockey. But I can't explain it, and it's like really almost exciting the whole time.
You said it was beautiful. You said there's a lot of chemistry between the players. It's basically a rom-com is what hockey is.
I like hockey more than I like rom-coms, which is weird. But I did fall in love with the St. Louis Blues watching, like, the Stanley Cup run made me a super fan of the Blues. I love them. I want the greatest success for them. I will watch regular season games in the beginning of the year now and be invested in it. I'm just working on it. Baseball and football, I get that. I understand it in my soul. I'm working on the hockey thing. The second I look down at my phone is when they score. I will watch and watch and watch and watch, and I look away, and then they score.
Yeah.
That's and I'm why they like, need to add the tail back to the puck for people like you to watch when it's really flying.
The 90s. I remember that. That was probably right about for people like me. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to give you my 19 weeks update. What's happening at 19 weeks of gestation in this baby that I'm growing here? It's pretty crazy. Katie, you're going to like the update for this week. Stick around. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Appreciate you being here. So I don't know why. I don't know, Ryan, if you remember when you and your wife were expecting. Did she get emails that told her each week, like, this was this week and this is.
Yeah, I think especially the first pregnancy, she was super excited about that. I don't remember after that, but probably.
I don't remember anything after that.
Maybe, kind of.
It's all a blur. Well, Katie, I don't know if I know you have friends, close friends who have had babies, so I don't know how much of this you've been exposed to, but there is a thing in the world of expecting where mothers are told what size produce is equal to the size of the baby.
Yes.
The baby is the size of a tomato.
Oh, wow.
Yay, a little tomato.
An heirloom tomato, to be specific, 6 inches, and they measure them head to rump because you know what the fetal position is, obviously. So if you're measuring, like, there's no way to stretch the baby out and be like, we'll see how tall you are, little guy. So 6 inches head to rump, and the baby weighs 8.5 ounces, which is ridiculous because I have gained more weight than that. Slim 180, I've got you on speed dial. Okay, so this is kind of the thing that I saw that I thought was pretty cool. The skin on your baby's fingers and toes has buckled into distinct patterns and are now permanent and unique.
Whoa.
That's kind of cool, right? And another thing it told me about right now is that your baby's sensory development, I'm 19 weeks pregnant, folks. Like, this is second trimester, completely and totally abortable in the state of Illinois, which is really up to birth. The Reproductive Health Care Act, sponsored by your Metro East Democrats, got rid of the partial birth abortion ban in the state of Illinois. So in Illinois, this is significant In a lot of other states, they'll have like pain capable, which says that once the baby can feel pain, that's when they become not abortable. And other people will say no third trimester. 19 weeks in many, many states, very abortable. Your baby's sensory development is exploding. Her brain is designating specialized areas for smell, taste, hearing, vision, and touch. And then they say to sing to your baby because your baby can now hear you.
Cool! So cool!
You want me to put headphones on my belly and then, Katie, you can sing to my baby?
Yes! That is so cool!
Isn't that neat to know that that at 19 weeks in, that your kid will start to recognize your voice, especially as a mom? I got to watch what I say, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
My kid's going to come out and be like, discern cuss words yet.
What's wrong with Joe Biden?
I have a question, though. So whenever, you know, you first hold your baby, and they obviously are new to this world, they don't recognize your face, but do they recognize your voice whenever because you've had all this time?
Yeah.
To talk to it.
They know who mama is.
Cool.
There is a, generally speaking, what is encouraged is like the moment the baby is delivered. And okay, I'm just going to be honest here. It's supposed to be a really beautiful moment, and it is, but it's also really gross.
Yeah.
But they usually deliver the baby and like hand the baby, assuming that everything is okay, hand the baby right to mom, because an immediate skin-to-skin contact is supposed to be a very important thing. And I was like really emotional and also like, clean this thing off a little bit.
Just a little bit.
I'm just being honest. Like, okay, cute baby. Can I have a rag?
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
We got a situation.
It's just like the babies are not naturally soft and sweet smelling. You got to work to make them that way.
Yeah.
The skin to skin thing, man. My wife was pregnant with twins, so I was going to do whatever she asked me to do. But man, this is really embarrassing to tell on the radio.
Do it.
I'm in now.
Let's hear.
So when they were born, she's like, well, I'm going to do skin to skin right when they're born. And I want to hold them. And she had all this plan. I mean, she's very much a planner, but she's like, look, I want you to do skin to skin too. And I was like, why? And she said, because I'm reading it on the internet somewhere. And I'm like, well, I guess that means I have to do it then. So I did. I took my shirt off in that room. And they put she put the babies on me, or I did. I don't remember who. But all I remember is sitting there with my shirt off with two infants on me.
Hold the beer.
You try to feed them, did you?
Like I'm nursing. Like I'm about to nurse them. And a nurse walks in, and it was like, whoa, I'm going to back out of the room.
I've seen a lot of weird things,
much.
But.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a delivery nurse, but this is too much for me. Okay, great. Glad I did that for you, honey.
I have seen a lot of photos in my timeline of dads doing that.
Sweet.
So it's
oh, really? I'm glad to hear that.
No, it's,
man, I have not seen any.
I do.
No one will ever see one of me either.
I don't know if my husband is listening right now. I'm going to ask him later, or he's going to message me here in a second. But I'm pretty sure if I said, Jared, I'm going to need you to take your shirt off, you're going to need to do some skin to skin, he's going to go, I'm not doing that.
But if that it was not baby one, you
no.
think he would have done it? What he would have done? What he
I would have thought
he'd
go though. Okay.
It depends on where I was on the hormonal roller coaster that happens after you have babies.
Oh, the babies.
Take your shirt off and hold this baby to your skin.
Okay, let's do that. Take all the shirts off.
Yeah, everybody who comes in this room, you're taking your shirt off. My wife said so. Excuse me, ma'am. I don't know if you've heard that there's been an edict issued.
Uh-oh. Just got a message from the husband.
Uh-oh.
It's a Donald Trump gif going, nope.
That really
shaking his fingers saying no.
And listen, I am applauding you.
But Ryan, I'm telling you this right now. He's lying. Because if I was in an if I was being an emotional basket case and I was like, I just want you to do skin to skin with your child, he'd be like,
Looks like we're doing skin to skin with the
kids. That's what we're doing today.
No, listen, Jared, we just created reality right here on the radio, and you are a part of it now. So you are officially barred from doing that for my sake.
Real quick before we turn this over to the Glover Show, this is the real God's honest truth. One of the main reasons why I wanted to have another baby is because Jared got puking out of his mind sick the morning we were supposed to deliver my third kid, and I went to the hospital without him.
Oh, man.
I'm like, I have to get this thing out. And he was there for the delivery, but I did 80% of it with my doula, who is one of my best friend's moms. And he was like, no, go. It'll be fine. He showed up. He rallied for 2 hours. Ugh. And then after Evelyn was born, he was like slumped over in a chair. And the nurses looked at him and they're like, what's wrong with him? Like, he doesn't feel good. And they just looked at him and they go, you're going home.
You need to go.
So my mom came and sat with me and the other kids showed up. But like, I was so miserable. We were going to have to schedule it for like the next week if we waited. He's like, no, go. I'll be fine. I'll be there. So he's not going to get sick this time.
He's not going to get sick. No.
Not allowed. If he gets real sick, I'll have him come do skin to skin, Ryan.
You're sick. Also, come in and put the babies on your bare chest.
Glover's coming up to clean up this mess. Don't go away.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.